Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at Clyde's in Columbia Town Center with my co-host, Dennis Lane. Joining us today is Kate Hetherington, the president of Howard Community College. But as always, we first like to take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week. Dennis, you have any earth-shattering news for us this week?
You know, when I started with my top story this week, I kept thinking of that old movie that was called They Shoot Horses, Don't They? You know, what is it in this county that all of a sudden we're so good with animals, but when it comes to people, we kind of fall apart. And what I'm talking about is a story where Days End Farm, which is a horse rehabilitation place out in western Howard County, had a great program set up with Maryland Department of Corrections where they had female inmates that were nearing the end of their sentences coming out and volunteering to work at the farm. And everybody thought this was a great idea. It was working fine. Well, within
they weren't violent criminals that were incarcerated for violent crimes.
I'll pull up the quote here from the flyer. They were nearing the end of their release from prison, and they've been... they've done their time, and this is just kind of their way to transition into the community. Well, you know, now that they've stopped the program. So we continue to rehabilitate horses, but the people we can't have out there. Apparently there was an uproar, although the head of the farm said she didn't receive any complaints, but all of a sudden Delegate Warren Miller, gets in the middle of this thing.
It's an election year, right?
It's an election year, and he says he's received 10 to 20 complaints. Now, that's interesting in and of itself because, what was it, 10 or 20 complaints about these inmates, these dangerous female inmates with the horses out of the farm. I'll get Warren's comment here. He says that he doesn't believe this is appropriate in a rural area. You know, Paul, you've driven down the road before and you've seen these road gangs from the prison
cleaning up the side of the roads.
They're out in the western part of the county, and nobody has a problem with that.
But you know, just playing devil's advocate, I imagine there are probably kids that participate at this horse farm, and I'm wondering if that the kid element here is causing it to become a little bit more of a heightened political issue than it otherwise would. You know, kids don't normally run around driving down the side of the road on their bikes by themselves unsupervised. So playing devil's advocate.
I'm sure it is. But, you know, the other thing, apparently these female inmates were supervised by correctional officers. It's not like they were just put out there by themselves. So, you know, it sounds to me like they went out of their way to have plenty of safeguards in their place. But, no, in a political year, you could, it's always good politics to say we don't want prisoners around. But what do we do with people? Do we leave them in jail forever?
No, can't do that. Well, we had an earthquake today.
That was earth-shattering news.
That was earth-shattering news. Yeah, 3.6 on the Richter scale.
Did you wake up?
I did. I woke up. You know, it was funny because I woke up and I knew something woke me up, but it was one of those moments where I wasn't really sure what. And then I'm driving to work 2 hours later, and they said there was an earthquake at 5 o'clock, and it was like an aha moment. That's what woke me up.
Well, I don't know what you did, but I rolled over in bed and said, Denise, what was that? Kate, did you?
Yeah, my alarm went off at 5. So, right about that time, and I felt something. I thought, geez, I wonder what, it felt like an earthquake, and then I went back to sleep.
Well, you know, it felt like a big truck rumbling through the neighborhood.
Yeah, and I thought maybe something like that.
Well, you know, it's funny, I pulled up a little bit of news about the earthquake today, preparing for the show. And
this is worse than California, apparently.
Yeah, a couple things really struck me as funny. First of all, I was looking at the Fox online news about this, and I'm reading the story, and then there's just this break in the middle of the column. And it says, send us your photos and video. And I just thought that was incredibly funny. I'm not exactly sure what I'm supposed to send. So anyway, I also took the opportunity to look at the history of earthquakes in Maryland since 1758. And there was some very interesting...
You had a little time this morning.
I did. It was a slow morning. It was fascinating. 30% of all the earthquakes that hit Maryland between 1758 and 2005 occurred in all of U.S. states.
Who knew about all of you?
Well, you knew about it growing up, didn't you, Dennis?
It was a pretty hot place, but we never knew it was a regular fault zone. But we lost.
Hang on one second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
One final note here. And, you know, I think the lesson to be learned from this earthquake, also on this Fox write-up on this earthquake, they had some comments from their readers. And one of these just struck me as very funny. And this is from Irene G. And she says, God is warning us, and you people aren't hearing his warnings. You think you can keep on with what things that you do, and that God isn't tired of your doings. Well, think again, people. So apparently Irene thinks that this is God's punishment for all our misgivings.
This was a shot across the bow.
But
you know, at 3.6, it wasn't that big of a shot.
No, it really wasn't.
So we lost a kind of famous Colombian this week. You know, it certainly probably wasn't in your generation, Paul, when you were growing up, but when I grew up when the mall first opened back in 1970, I think it was 71. I was in high school. And the place where it kind of had a lot of energy in the mall, it was right off the center court, was Barry's Restaurant. And they had a kind of a takeout pizza counter that you could get a slice, and a lot of kids worked there. And the impresario of that restaurant and the owner was Barry Young. And Barry was a great guy. And apparently after he got out of the restaurant business, he went on and did a lot of wonderful things in the community. I didn't know about until I read the thing in the flyer. But, you know, he'll be missed. And he was. It's always sad to see, you know, a personality like that pass on.
Yeah, sort of an icon in the community.
Yeah.
So, well, we became the second best place in the country to live, work, and play this week, according to Money Magazine.
Paul, I used to work for a guy at the Rouse Company that said, you know, he was always pushing us to be the best. Be the best. And one of his favorite lines was, do you remember the second girl you ever kissed? Do you remember the second guy to walk on the moon? But, boy, you know, in Howard County, we're so proud of being second best to a town. And we're second best to a town that's basically a walk-in freezer.
Well, and you had some communication with their local blogger, did you?
Yeah, number one was a town called Eden Prairie, Minnesota. Now, Eden Prairie, in the wintertime, the temperature really gets above two digits. Rarely. I mean, mostly. It's cold. And it's a town of 60,000 people. So I kind of reached out to a local blogger in Eden Prairie and said, you know, gee, what's it like to be number one? And his comment back was, Eden Prairie's a pretty brain-dead place.
A guy who really loves where he lives.
Really,
huh?
Loves where he lives.
Well, the other thing that struck me funny about going to your point of being number two, there's an article, I believe, in the Flyer or Explore Howard this week. And they talked to Cynthia Coyle, the chairperson of the Columbia Association's board of directors, about her impressions of being number two. And I just thought it was funny that she went on to say, I think that if we keep pushing the work that we're doing now throughout Columbia, we could be number one. And I would love to see us be number one. I just think it's ironic that the Columbia Association actually thinks that they had a part in making us number one, as opposed to maybe preventing us from being number one.
All they seem to do is get in the way of things. You know, and that kind of, it brings up another funny, it's kind of going off kilter, but that never stopped me before. Two of the most vocal proponents saying that we need more affordable housing in Columbia are Cynthia Coyle, the chair of the Columbia Association, and Alan Klein, a candidate for county council. Both of them live in Hobbits Glen, which is the least affordable housing neighborhood in all of Columbia. So,
and then there's that, right?
And then there's that. But out of that article in the Flyer about being the second best city, my favorite quote came from Liz Bobo, who, again, has refused to be on our show. And the problem is I'm scratching my head on this quote. It says, I am less interested than ever in trying to emulate other communities that are not near the top of the list. What do you think she means by that?
I would never try to get into Liz's head. Speaking of Liz Bobo, the Columbia Democratic Club this week looked at their endorsements for the upcoming election. And would you know it, Liz Bobo got the lowest number of votes of all the Democrats running this year. She only, I think you needed 54 out of 107 votes to be
70.
Endorsed.
Yeah.
And she got 70. Courtney Watson had 98. Calvin Ball had 96. Ken Ullman and Jen Taurasi each had 95. Mary Kay Sigaty had 88.
88.
Very interesting.
I also heard that Alan Klein got 14.
Well, speaking of Alan Klein, he had his fundraiser, his inaugural fundraiser this week.
This land is your land.
It wasn't a fundraiser. It was a song. It was a sing-along.
It was a hootenanny.
And it was crazy. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Anyway. You got anything else?
I got nothing. I think maybe it's time we introduce our guest.
All right. Well, joining us today is Kate Hetherington, the president of Howard Community College. She has been the president, I think, since 2007. Do I have that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Kate, you know, when I was growing up, you know, everybody kind of derisively referred to community college as like the 13th grade.
Mm-hmm.
That has changed hugely.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, now the community college is actually a vital part of our community in training our workforce.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I want to mention about that, it's an interesting statistic, is that one out of every four Howard County graduates comes directly to Howard Community College for the fall semester. And if you looked at the number of undergraduates who are enrolled in a Maryland Public Institution of Higher Education across Howard County, 44% of them come to Howard Community College.
Wow, 44%. Well, I do know. I remember I went to a Glen Ellyn High School graduation a couple years ago, and
finally graduate?
Yeah. That was Wild Lake, man. Go Wildcats. And I recall that it was some kind of ceremony, and the kids were getting up saying where they were going to school. Mm-hmm. And it was easily 1 in 4, said HCC, mm-hmm. for the next year.
And that's evident by what you see happening on our campus. So our enrollment overall, we use the term full-time equivalent, last year was up almost 13%, and we had anticipated being up only 3. So more and more we see students making the choice to come to HCC. I would say in some cases, maybe it's not their first choice. And we know this for a fact, the economy has had an impact on students coming because some of them had planned to go to other institutions, but because we're affordable, we're accessible, many of them are getting their start with us. So, you know, you say to a parent, do you want to spend $4,000 a year, or do you want to spend $40,000?
I think difference.
I think one of your predecessors, Dwight Burrell, used to call it the $20,000 party. You know, the first year in college where you don't quite work out.
Right, that's true.
You're actually touching on a number of things I want to come back to, but I want to take a step back real quick and just talk a little bit about you.
Oh, okay.
You know, who is Kate Hetherington and where's your background? You actually
this
got
is
your
Kate Hetherington.
I know that. But you actually got your start at a community college, did you not?
Community College of Philadelphia.
No kidding.
And I worked there after I graduated and all that. I went back to work there, and I worked there for 22 years before coming to HCC, and I came to Howard County 11 years ago.
So when you graduated from a community college?
I graduated from community college, then I went on to Penn State for my bachelor's, Villanova University for my master's, and Weiner University for my PhD.
So you went from a community college to an Ivy League college?
Yes, and in fact, Penn State is not Ivy League.
I'm sorry, I was thinking university.
But I met my husband at Community College of Philadelphia, and he did go to an Ivy League. He went to the University of Pennsylvania following community college, and that was back in the day. And again, that 13th grade, you know, right. You would hear that. But actually, it was one of the most exciting educational experiences I had, because that was in the early 1970s. You had the civil rights movement, the women's movement, right. Guys coming back from Vietnam, all mixed into a classroom. So, you know, for a young kid like me, 17 years old, coming from an all-girls Catholic high school.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And you actually that kind of environment.
Welcome to the melting pot.
Yeah, it was actually a fabulous experience.
Wow. And you went actually and talked to one of the sisters, right, at the Catholic college that you attended, Catholic high school that
yes,
you attended.
Yeah.
And she tried to talk you out of it,
she
right?
She did. What happened, I said, you know, community colleges were in their infancy at that point, for the most part. And I was encouraged to go to an all Catholic women's university.
Of course.
There were a few of them in the area. And
nothing but the best, right?
Nothing but the best.
Stick with the Catholic girls.
That's right.
And I had enough of that after 12 years. And so I said, you know, sister, I've heard of this Community College of Philadelphia, and it sounds like a really exciting place. And I'm going to apply for admission. And she said, Well, first of all, she, like, you know, her, she was sitting there, and her, she
oh
popped back, and the veil popped back, and she said, oh, you don't want to do that, honey. It's all communists and hippies. And the next day, I hopped on the bus and signed up.
Sounds like my kind of people.
Now, is that because you wanted to hang out with hippies, or?
Communists.
I was ready for a change, and that sounded pretty exciting to a young girl.
But your story is actually really interesting, after Penn State, Widener was also in your background?
Villanova and then Widener.
Villanova, but I was
a working adult as I was getting my master's degree and my doctorate.
And then your doctorate. Okay.
All right, so let's go back to where we left off, and I didn't want to interrupt, but I wanted to make sure we covered a little bit about you. So it seems to me that community colleges are very well poised to re-engineer the skill sets of people during a changing economy. Mm-hmm. And do you attribute some of the increased enrollment, maybe beyond what you expected, to being in a position to help people gain skill sets so they can quickly get out there and, you know,
oh, absolutely.
Figure out?
Absolutely. You know, I mentioned the younger students because that's the fastest growing segment of our population. But, you know, when we look at that student population, the 25 to 40 age group and the 40 to beyond that, you know, we see upticks in those percentages as well. And what we see are people who are in jobs but looking to get new job skills. We see people who have been laid off and are looking for a recession-proof job, which, you know, you can get close to that in some professions.
Can you tell me about where I can find one of those?
Well, actually, we used to say that with nursing, but, you know, even because fewer people are using hospital benefits because they don't have them, because they don't have jobs, you know, the hospitals have felt that impact as well. So while our nurses, even like 3 years ago, even before they graduated, would have three or four jobs lined up. They're getting jobs, but it's not as quickly as it was in the past.
Really?
So they have to be patient. Yeah. In fact, USA Today had an article about that in the front page last week. So, and that's at four-year schools as well.
Well, you know, we're on, since we're talking about training, and nurses is certainly a growing field. But how about the cyber command? Does that mean anything to?
Oh yeah, yeah. We actually have a faculty member who received a BRAC grant recently to work on a special cyber security lab, and we will be hiring a full-time, we just got another grant too, we'll be hiring a full-time person just in that area. We see that as a great opportunity for us to provide training for contract trainers.
Now, what kind of training would that be? Is that computers?
It's IT, yeah.
And computer sciences.
So, and, you know, what we're doing, too, is we're reaching out to our students, and we're looking at reaching out even at the middle and high school level to ensure that students keep their nose clean while they're in high school because, you know, you're going to need clearances.
Don't put that picture on Facebook.
You're going to need those clearances. I mean, we've been telling students that for years.
Yeah.
I mean, every week someone comes in and, you know, wants to see someone's record, see if there's any disciplinary problems. And
is that right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. And, well, students, you know, they have a release, but if you're
right.
looking for a job
right.
in the government or some other secure fields, you have to have a clean record.
Yeah, a lot of these IT jobs are going to government contractors.
Mm-hmm.
Are you also going to be training people on the government contract process of going through? You know, it's a completely different world to get work from the government, whether it's the state or federal level.
Yeah.
Are you helping them figure out how to do that as well?
Yeah, we have we're a partner with the a business initiative that's through Kent Mensah and BRAC, and also Elijah Cummings, Congressman Cummings. We work, and Patty Keaton, who is in our continuing education division, is heavily involved in that. We've had some of our students who have gone through our entrepreneurial program go through this initiative where really what they do is they try and track the challenges that businesses face in going to try and get government contracts. And through Kent Mensah's efforts, they are tracking.
Kent is the Howard County BRAC coordinator.
Yes. Right. Thank you for saying that. And very knowledgeable in the field, very good at getting communication out to everyone. But he.
The guy writes a memo every other day.
He does. Yeah. He's very good. At least they're brief. They are brief.
Right, right.
Yeah.
They're brief.
They're
right.
Fits.
Do you read them
fits.
Or do you hit delete?
No, no. They're,
I actually.
Kate's right. They're BRAC
brief.
Fits.
Yeah. And I do read them.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah. So, so working with them through this initiative, we also are GSA certified, so we can provide training for government. We do work for NSA.
Now, so, that's my next question. So you have a reach out. You've actually coordinated some stuff with folks at Fort Meade?
Oh, yeah. We're part of the Fort Meade Alliance. And we have been from day one, have had a representation either through our continuing education division. I shouldn't say either through continuing education, also through our director or vice president for information technology. So we're looking at ways that we can address the needs of the workforce and provide the appropriate training. We've done computer forensics for a number of years now. So
is the IT field where you're seeing the biggest growth?
Health field.
Okay. Yeah. You've got a relationship with Howard County General, correct?
Oh, yes.
They're your next-door neighbors.
Yeah, very good relationship with them. When you're a nursing student or in either any of the other health fields, you have to do your clinicals.
Right.
And, of course, it's very convenient for our students to take their classes at our school, and they can literally walk across the pathway to go to Howard County General. And if they have kids, their kids can be at our Children's Learning Center for, daycare. So, we have it set up that we have this relationship. And We've had this from the beginning, and they're a very, very good partner. They've been very supportive with scholarship money, with giving us equipment that they were finished using for our radiologic technology program. Wow. So, you know, and Vic Broccolino, I can't say enough about
him. He's a good guy. We had him on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Now, is nursing, within the healthcare field, is nursing still as much in demand as it once was, or has that diminished somewhat?
We can't keep up with the demand. At various times of the year, we have wait lists. Right now, we have a wait list where students have all their credentials. They're ready to go into nursing. We have nowhere to put them. We have 60 students right now on that wait list.
Is that the problem of not enough instructors? Or
Space.
But you're building like there's no tomorrow. I mean, you've got one of the most active construction programs in the county, I think.
Well, we've been renovating. Yeah, you know, we opened almost 40 years ago, actually October of 1970.
I used to think you've got all kinds of land out there, but you've used it all?
No, we have 120 acres, but, you know, we're in the midst of our facilities master plan. Actually, we just finished it, and we have mapped out the future of HCC in terms of buildings, but a new building that's coming up that's desperately needed, we'll start groundbreaking on that next month, will be a new parking garage, 750-space parking garage. We've been shuttling students from either the mall or Wild Lake for 3 years. Right. We're into our fourth year of shuttling, and we'll have to continue. And then right after that, we're going to start building a new health sciences building. And that will allow us the opportunity to expand in nursing. But again, that won't be open until, you know, January of 2013.
This is one of those things where you got to build the parking garage first so you can free up the space to build the other building.
Absolutely.
That's precisely what Howard County General just had to do.
Right. Mm-hmm. You got to build the garage first.
Yeah.
So you mentioned entrepreneurship. You've actually got a affiliation, I think an articulation agreement with Babson.
Yes,
we college
do.
Or university?
College.
College. In New England. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Well, that's an exciting initiative. When we put together our entrepreneurial program, we actually modeled our first 2 years after their first 2 years. And this all came out of the work by what we call the Commission on the Future. Every 5 years, we ask about 50 members of our community to come in and help us shape the future of the college. And we incorporate those ideas into our strategic planning. One person you may know, Jeff Agnor, was very instrumental in promoting the whole idea of entrepreneurship at the college. And so we made, you know, a group of people went up to Massachusetts, they visited the people, and so one thing led to another, and now we have this articulation agreement with him. And we're the first community college for them in the nation that they have this articulation agreement with. They're anticipating doing more, but we're the first ones that they've had this.
Now, how did that come about? I mean, Babson's pretty far away from us.
Well, you know,
great reputation, though.
They have a great reputation. We've stayed connected with them. You know, they knew that we modeled our first 2 years after them. Uh-huh. We have connections in the community who know them, so that all helps our students.
Wow.
We're actually had an intern working at our law firm that's finishing up here in the next couple weeks, and she's actually going to Babson for college, so we're very excited to mm-hmm. kind of
that's
follow
great.
Through with that.
You know, we've talked about the education components over at the college, the nursing, the cyber command, but I got to tell you, one of the things that I love about the new college campus is not that new, but the Horowitz Center.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a fascinating, and I don't think a lot of people in the community are aware of what's going on over there. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Well, you know, it's there are a lot of people aware because some nights you'll go in there and there's something going on at the Smith Theater. It could be a rep stage production. Rep stage, we have equity actors. We're the only community college in the nation with equity actors.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow. I didn't know that.
So you get top-notch performances. When
right
you
here
go,
in our backyard.
Right here in our backyard. You don't have to travel up to Baltimore, Washington, come to HCC. We have outstanding classical music program, and then we partner with organizations in the community, like the Candlelight Concert Society and Columbia Film Society. So, you know, it's really fun some nights when you go in there and you got a show going on with rep stage, and then you have a
recital
music
going
performance,
on.
And then you got classes going on in between. I mean, it's
and you have
an
art gallery too.
Oh yeah, and the right now there's a wonderful show. It's it comes from the Baltimore Museum of Art, and it's all these great icons and photography. It's their photographs, yeah. And it's like walking through that is like walking through America. You see, you know, the photographs from the Depression, from the '60s. It's just spans the decades.
For the program, is there like a subscription series for the shows that you have there?
Yes, Rep Stage. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we partner with restaurants in the community where you can do a dine and theater.
Dinner and
a show. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kate, we had talked a little while ago about the increasing costs of education, and one of the big initiatives that the college has is the Grand Prix.
Yes.
And that's a horse event that really the college has been doing for years and years. And
does that involve prisoners?
I'm sorry?
Does it involve prisoners?
No, but perhaps if it would, maybe we'd raise some more money, right? But that raises significant dollars, does it not, for scholarships for students to participate at HCC?
Yeah, it's our premier fundraising event. One of the things that happened last year is we had to move it off campus for the first time. And Georgia Maryland Doge were gracious enough to allow us to use their horse farm. So here we're on a horse farm that's almost as big as our entire campus. And it is an incredible experience. Just the best place. I didn't think it could get better moving off campus, but it has, moving it to Marama Farm. And then it reaches out to that part of the county that, you know, can get a better connection with the college. The other thing is we...
Will it be there again this year?
Yes, it will be there. And
is that the new home of it for...
We hope. Yeah.
From your perspective,
Georgia,
right?
Georgia, Maryland, are you listening?
Because really, you don't have the space to do it.
Hey, nah. Dave, can you get them on the phone for us?
Now, they actually have said, you know, as long as you want it, Kate, the college can use it. And we have a wonderful raffle. You can go online and check this out for Mercedes-Benz. Only 1,200 tickets. They're $100 a ticket, 3 for $250. So you have very good odds of winning, probably better than the Mega Millions, and definitely better than the Mega Millions in terms of the odds.
Well, after having bought tickets year after year after year, I'm not feeling my odds are all that great.
Well, maybe it's your time. Hey, last year we had the winner buy a ticket 5 minutes beforehand, put the ticket in the drum, turn this big drum around like 10 times.
Isn't that funny?
Picked out his ticket. He was
all right,
there.
Next year
that
I'm not buying until 5 minutes before.
That's the moral of the story. Kate, any plans for HCC to become a four-year institution?
I think I'm asked that every single week.
Are you
I'm
really?
I'm not kidding. In fact, some students have come up to me and they said, we are a four-year school. I said, trust me, we are not a four-year school. Where that makes sense is if you either have programs that are not available in local four-year colleges or universities, or if you, someplace where... Miami-Dade was one of the first schools where they are now offering four-year programs because their state universities could not accept the number of students that they had transferring. So if your students don't have a place to go or they don't have programs, you have to look at that. But
that's not the case here.
No, because we're centrally located. I mean, the top schools for transfer our students are College Park, UMBC, Towson. They go all over. But those, and, you know, there's space available. So if we ever had to do it, we probably would look at it programmatically, with like which program are students having trouble transferring to.
Well, we got to start to wrap up. But I want to dovetail on it. There's one other question. Is there student housing in the future for HCC?
On our last master plan that we did 5 years ago, we did have a place for student housing. But, you know, it's funny, at just 5 years, how your things can change. Yeah. And the reality is that our need for academic program is so strong that's been put off on the back burner. In fact, it's not even on the current master plan. Now,
is there a need, though?
Not that we see right now compared to the need that we have for the academic program. We did have a market analysis done that demonstrated need, but, you know, you have a bunch of needs and you have to prioritize those needs, and the academics is first.
Well, and with 5,500 new units coming into Town Center Columbia, probably all right for a little while, right? I'm glad we waited till the very end to actually hit you up with a question that you get all the time, so I'm glad we found questions other than that. Kate, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Thanks for sharing us a little
fun.
Bit about the college, and we look forward to having you back again.
All right.
Thanks.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
We have talked before. You know, we used to have this walk-around program.
Yep.
Paul and I did. We thought we'd try some different stuff.
We're experimenting with different things.
We're
finish up our show.
And so today, one of the things we thought we'd experiment with is inviting anybody who wanted to come on for 2 minutes to talk about whatever they want to talk about. And we had a taker.
Unbelievable interest. And we had like 38 people.
Yeah, it was crazy. I'm telling you.
I'm just kidding.
Was it 38? I thought it was 37. And the first one to step up was John Weinstein. John is a candidate for District 9A. And the House of Delegates for the state of Maryland. So, John, your two minutes begins now.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to come in and share some thoughts. I'll give you a little quick overview. I'm a candidate, as you said, for the House of Delegates in 9A. I am a local business owner as well. I own a business here that actually is focused on improving government performance. So I've been doing that for most of my career. Working with government agencies, federal, state, and local, helping them improve the way they do business, returning savings to taxpayers, being more efficient with the dollars they get. Even wrote a book on it recently. It was published in March, a book about improving management practices in the federal government space is one of the areas we focus on. I served in the military, was an Army officer in the military police, actually with an MP brigade up in Gaithersburg. I was a reserve officer for a few years, graduated out of the ROTC program at Boston University, and have been an active member of the community for, you know, for as long as I've lived in Howard, a coach, HCYP, soccer, basketball, and in baseball. Baseball is my passion, so I spend a lot of time doing that. I'm excited to be running now because I think it's a great opportunity. I'm a unique candidate. There aren't any other small business owners running in this district. The only person with a military background that's running in this district. And I'm offering a different choice because I'm a moderate, kind of centrist politician. I've had over a dozen events in people's houses, Republicans, unaffiliated, Democrats, support from the full spectrum. And I think that's really what this district needs. It needs folks who are going to look at issues based on the merits of those issues and consider them based on what the impact is on the district, the county, and the state, as opposed to some playbook out of a party ideology. So I'm going to leave some time for you guys. And I got 2 minutes, and I'm wrapping up. It's 3, 2, 1. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity. And there, I beat the buzzer.
That was nicely done, John.
Yeah, very nicely done. John.
You rehearsed that to get it just down to
actually, 2 minutes. If you believe it, I didn't rehearse it. I don't do well if I've rehearsed something. I gave a talk last night for about an hour. That's why I said I can fill an hour pretty well about my book. So
if we're not rehearsing, you fit right in with this group because we don't do a lot of rehearsing ourselves.
That's great.
But you know, it's funny. Your visit here is timely today because the top story in our news recap today was the Days End Farm controversy with the prisoners.
I don't know if it's a controversy as much as a...
Well, it is for 10 or 20 people.
It is. Right.
All right, John, we'll put you on the spot. What do you think about that?
You know what? I think it's an error in communication. You know, if people have been notified, given a chance to understand what was going on, the type of people that were coming out to do the volunteering, this sort of thing happens all over the state, all over the country, these programs where there are non-violent offenders who are out in the community doing a little bit to repay their debt. I don't know the specifics of the particular folks. A friend of mine was quoted in the newspaper today that he was against it. I haven't talked to him about why he was so upset. So, you know, he has a young daughter, and I can understand not wanting to have your kid in that environment. So
gotta be careful, because if you can't get your friends to vote for you, then you sure can't get other people to vote for you.
That's right. I'm actually more worried about my family, actually.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the things that one of your opponents, incumbent Warren Miller, said that there's no place for prisoners working in a volunteer organization in a rural setting.
Okay.
And then there's that.
Is that a good feat? Listen, it depends. It's just a function of the setting. I'm not sure it's a big deal. Rural, urban, suburban.
John, we wish you much luck in the election.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming by today.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Dennis. It was great seeing you guys. Thanks so much.
That about wraps up another episode of And Then There's That. On behalf of myself and my co-host, Paul Scowney, we'd like to thank our producer, Dave Bittner, for making us look good on radio, and to Paul Kraft and Clyde's Restaurant for hosting our show again today. We'll be back again on July 30th with special guests and former chronicler of early rock and roll legends and present Nature Day photographer.
It's easy for you to say.
You know, here's a guy, you know, he used to cover wildlife in the rock scene. Now he's covering wildlife in Wild Lake. Michael Oberman. So we'll hope you join us then.
Have a good one, Dennis.